Hello and welcome to I Am The Egg Pods with me, Chris Shaw. Before we start, I just want to say about Opera Holland Park, which took place on the 1st of July. Just a few thank yous, really. Thank you firstly to James Clutton, who's the CEO of this beautiful venue, without whom none of this would have been possible. He actually moved two other events on that day to ensure that this actually happened. So thank you, James. Also to the brilliant guests, Mark Lewison, David Contick, Stuart McConey, and lovely Samira Ahmed, who basically I ensured sat next to me because I was so terrified. Thank you, Samira. Thanks to my amazing wife, who really does put up with a lot of Beatles nonsense in her life, and she's just supporting me all the way through. But especially thanks to all of you who came. I mean, there were people from Edinburgh, Liverpool. It was just so lovely, and you were all beautiful, and you all filled that venue with so much love. So thank you, thank you. Anyway, the Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by a globally recognised expert in AI, technology and public policy, Verity Harding. Hello.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming. We're doing this emergency Egg Pod for reasons which I'm sure people can probably guess. But can we just start by just briefly telling us, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do? Yeah, exactly. That's why I think.
What do you do?
I do.
Who are you?
What are you here? What are
why
you talking
are you on
about?
My screen?
Yeah, exactly. Why is there a
Am
lady
I dreaming
in the TV?
This? Yeah. The voices. It's the voices again.
Yeah, exactly.
I might just use that bit. That questioning's a bit on the rough side, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so I'm really excited to be talking about this with you. At the moment, I'm a visiting fellow at Cambridge University, and I'm researching the history of transformative technology and what that can teach us about the future of AI. And I'm from the tech world. I've spent the last decade or so at Alphabet. So first Google and then DeepMind, DeepMind being one of the world's leading AI labs. And that's where I kind of set up all of their AI ethics and policy work. And that's what I think about on a day-to-day basis is, you know, what does AI mean for society? And I've got a book about AI coming out next year called AI Needs You. And it's about the importance of more people getting involved in the AI conversation.
And there's been a lot of it recently online.
Yes. Yeah, it has gone quite crazy recently, that's for sure.
Which is why I'm so pleased you're on. Before we do talk about that, I've got to ask, when did you first discover the Beatles?
What a joy to talk about. So I'm a child of anthology. It was in the 90s for me. I would have been, 11, 10, 11, 12. And I was pretty new to it. My parents did like the Beatles and they played Beatles and Stones, and but they were much more, they were into 60s music, but it was much more kind of Motown. So what I really remember listening to growing up was much more Smokey Robinson and Marvin Gaye. They were fans enough to watch this documentary and I watched it with them, and I was really kind of instantly smitten. I just loved them, and I think I really experienced a kind of Beatlemania like kids my age would have done in the 60s. You know, they were at home watching the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show in black and white, cross-legged in front of the TV. And that's exactly what I was doing. So it was really from then that the love started.
Lovely. So today we're talking, this is a bit of an odd one because it's purely based on conjecture, much of this.
Yes.
But a brief overview. In June 23, during an interview with Radio 4, Paul McCartney revealed that a new Beatles song, likely to be Now and Then, would be released before the end of the year. And the song utilises AI, or artificial intelligence technology, to clean up the noise from John Lennon's original vocal track, recorded in a demo. The other Beatles then finished the song, creating a new recording. And Sean Lennon has clarified on Twitter that AI was used solely to remove noise from his father's vocal track. But then to add a bit of confusion, there was another unusual source in Penn Jillette who's one half of the magicians Penn and Teller, and they were doing shows in London. And at the end of the show, Giles Martin invited him to come up and see the studios at Abbey Road. Penn then, knowingly or not, spilled the beans on his podcast, and this has caused a lot of conjecture online. He's stating that Paul's vocals have had AI treatment to make him sound younger, and that is the line that has caused a lot of confusion on this. I don't think it has, but again, it's all conjecture. And he's also said that the harmony vocals from Because have then been repurposed for the song Now and Then. But first of all, I guess from your perspective, what were your thoughts when you first heard this?
My first thoughts when I heard the Penn Jillette clip, because I listened to that after you shared it on Twitter, was, you know, Apple needs to think about their security a bit better. Is that, Chris, can that be really true that Giles Martin would have just shown Penn Jillette around Abbey Road and played him all this like top secret future Beatles stuff? Can that be true?
I think if you think of albums like McCartney 3 and Egypt Station, the amount of viral marketing that went online, I mean, there was, with McCartney 3, they'd set up a website where if you viewed the source code, there'd be three dice on it indicating that McCartney 3, they know that Beatles fans will search out any information they can. Once the rumours start, all it took was Paul saying, oh yeah, we're doing the last Beatles song by the end of the year. People are going to be scouring the internet. And I think the fact that Penn is a magician, there's no coincidence that he's leaked this information. I think it's now been taken offline, but that's pure. Apple would have known 100%.
Right.
I think it's all part of the marketing, because hence we're doing this. You know, other people have set up blogs.
And, you know, right. Okay.
It's got the Beatles community excited. Okay. I think it is part of the whole thing. I might be wrong. I don't know.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was thinking, what an odd thing for them to have done. Just. He's kind of like, you know, being kept super under wraps. I mean, I did read people saying that about Paul announcing it on the Today programme as well, saying, you know, he kind of knew what he was doing. But I don't know, he did just get asked in the, you know, I think Martha Carney, wasn't it, just kind of asked him about AI.
Yeah.
And the reason that he was asked about it, and this is what I think is so interesting about this, and you kindly read an article that I wrote about what the Beatles can teach us about AI. And obviously AI is my industry, my area of expertise, and I was really just looking for an excuse to write about the Beatles and managed to find a way to smush them together. It's the best, you know, I've been doing tech for such a long time. This is the best time for me that there's an excuse to make it somehow be about the Beatles. But what I was saying in that article was that the Beatles have been using AI for a really long time already, and nobody cared. And in fact, in this book that I've written, I was wanting to write at the beginning about really kind of cool examples of AI that I like that people might not think of as AI. Because there's this kind of cliched saying that it's only cool AI until it works, you know, and then no one calls it AI anymore. So, you know, we use AI to filter spam out of your email inbox, but no one thinks of that as AI anymore.
Mm.
And so I was wanting to say, look, they used AI in Get Back to clean up the vocals and make sure that it was really good quality, right? And that was really, really exciting. But I couldn't find, I needed a citation. I couldn't find one anywhere because no one had even written about it. No one was writing. No one cared at all. And they obviously used it. It was written a bit more about in the Revolver release last year. They talked about that a bit more. But this time when Paul mentions it, everyone goes crazy. And I think that what's happening there is there's just a big difference in different types of AI. So AI is now an umbrella term, and it kind of is a, you know, covers a bunch of different, very different techniques and pieces of software. And what the Beatles have been using is this kind of AI enabled or machine learning enabled demixing technology. But people have confused that with a different type of AI, which is called generative AI. And that's when something completely new is generated.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those on YouTube.
Right.
I think, this is where I need you here. Tell me, I'm thinking how it works is because you've got a lot of Beatles singing other people's songs or the voices of John and the voices of Paul. But I'm thinking a lot of these are homemade. So it could be like me singing along to a guitar, singing, I don't know, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. And then I can teach the AI, or the AI can learn to replace my voice with Ringo.
Yes.
Possibly.
Is exactly. That how it works? I think there's two different ways that it works. There's a voice cloning where exactly that, it takes your voice and turns it into a different voice, which I guess is a kind of souped up auto-tune. And then there's a version where it kind of, yes, it learns from lots of examples. I mean, I should say, you know, the way that a lot of AI and machine learning works is that it is given lots of examples of something and it is trained on that to be able to replicate it itself. So a lot of people might know about ChatGPT, which is this new chatbot that's kind of got everybody very excited, and that's generative AI. Yeah. And that is trained on just huge amounts of human language, you know, text. And so it uses its training to be able to predict what the next word in a sequence might be. And so, yes, in this case, you can teach it, this is what John Lennon's voice sounds like. And it can then create that in whatever way that you want it to do. So it is really amazing technology, but it's obviously being used in these really, some really exciting ways and some really concerning ways. And one of the more concerning ways, I think, is when it's being used to kind of cross over with somebody's existing creative IP. And there's a lot for the industry to think about when it comes to that.
Oh, boy, yeah. Because I think another misleading thing, and again, we're pointing out that this is not what's going on now and then.
No. Well, we don't think, I mean, Penn Jillette seems to think it might be.
Well, he did say one thing. He said about Paul's voice being de-aged. And he also made he said that they recorded this in the 80s. So all of his facts are slightly skew-whiff. But Paul did actually record vocals in the 90s, so he would have sounded younger on the original
outtake.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So it's true. It would be definitely possible for them to do that. But I think what you and I suspect they've done is just used more of the existing AI-enabled demixing technology. And that's what Sean's tweet seemed to say. And in that case, they teach the AI program, this is a piano and this is a voice. And this is a drum, and it can learn what those things are and separate them out so that you can then have each one individually. And this is what I was saying in my piece, is that they've been doing this for ages. I mean, even if you're not particularly a Beatles nerd, you know, Paul was performing at Glastonbury in front of how many hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, taking in people at home. Yeah. And that's what they used to separate out John's voice for the duet that he did with him, you know, the digital duet. So it's definitely there, and they've been using it already. So whether they're using anything new and different, I don't know.
Back in the early noughties, I was doing mashups, basically the theme tune to this podcast is one. But ideally, the idea is you get vocals from one song and the backing from another and create a new thing. And the early Beatles song's really easy because all the vocals are on one channel, the instruments on the left, so you just cut out one of the channels. But on some of the later mixes where the vocals are at the centre of the stereo image, that's more difficult to extract. So again, this is like early noughties. You'd need software like I used Adobe Audition. And oh boy, you'd just get some horrific audio frequencies if you're just trying to extract the vocals. Spectral Stereo has been around for a while, where they convert mono recordings into stereo. And that's Giles sort of developed a more advanced version of that to demix all the box sets since Pepper, really, in 2017. So here's my analogy. If you imagine the stereo image as a fried egg, bear with me, if you wanted to extract the yolk from the fried egg for some reason, don't worry about it.
Well, maybe you're a Californian influencer who only has egg white omelets or something, you know.
Yes, for that reason, that's the reason. So using software like Adobe Audition would be like tearing the egg white off with your hands, but crucially you're wearing boxing gloves. So there's a lot of mess and it's pretty poor quality. And using Spectral Stereo software is more like carving the egg white off with a sharp knife. But again, you're wearing boxing gloves, so it takes ages.
These are great images.
I'm guessing using AI is like carving out the yolk, but using lasers.
Right. I'm sorry, all I can think about now is, you know, another type of generative AI is generating images. So you can say, you know, I want to see a pink dolphin in space, and it can create it. And now I'm thinking, hopefully somebody creates Chris wearing boxing gloves trying to tear an egg fried egg apart. I'm going to do that as soon as we get off the phone. That's really helpful, though, actually, because it's really important to understand the progression of these things, but that it is a progression. You know, it isn't some brand new out of space technology that we all have to kind of panic about. These things are natural progressions. I was watching a documentary about autotune the other day and how everybody thought the music was over when autotune sort of started being used widely. So, yeah, well, that's a very... odd but very brilliant metaphor for how it's got easier for the people doing it. I listened, by the way, to a podcast with David Guetta being interviewed about AI, and he was saying that he thinks it's just a tool. He's not worried about it. He said it's not going to replace, he can't replace taste. It's just another tool that people like him can use. And it will reduce music production costs. But, you know, he very much was kind of describing it as just another tool in his toolbox.
Yeah. So let's have a bit of a history. I mean, we're still assuming that the song is going to be Now and Then. I think it's most likely that it is.
Yeah. Well, Paul's always said he was going to finish it, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's another controversial thing, because George, well, we know his thoughts on it. He didn't like it.
Rubbish. He said it was rubbish.
Yeah, that's one of the words. Yeah.
There's a really good clip from, I think it's maybe in Anthology or making of, might be in the making of, and it's Paul saying, yeah, and then we had this third one, and then George was like, nah, it's rubbish. And I was like, no, George, it's John. And he's like, nah, it's rubbish.
So let's have a bit of history of the song. We're March 1978, so we're in the middle of the so-called house husband years, where John took 5 years off to raise Sean, and then in 1980 he suddenly got inspired to compose all these new songs. But in reality, he recorded dozens of songs or demos at home at the Dakota. As well as that, he used to do little audio plays, and he had characters like the Great Wok and Maurice Dupont, Agent Provocateur, so he was clearly bored. And in mid-78, he was planning, along with Yoko, to write a Broadway musical called The Ballad of John and Yoko, which would have likely included both Free as a Bird and Real Love, and possibly Yoko's Every Man Has a Woman Who Loves Him. And we can also get an idea of what this would have been like if you get a copy of John's posthumous book, Skywriting by Word of Mouth, and there's an essay on it in there, so that's really interesting. Then 1979, John records an unfinished song called Now and Then, and it's a solo piano vocal demo at the Dakota. And then we skip to January 94, so Yoko gives Paul two cassettes of John's home recordings during Paul's visit to New York for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame event. And one of the tapes contains Free as a Bird and Real Love, and the other tape includes Grow Old With Me and Now and Then. So the Beatles, March 20th and 21st, 95, turn their attention to Now and Then, and they're said to have recorded a rough backing tape at an overdub session, but then after 2 days of recording, all work ceased, so the plans for a third Beatles reunion single was scrapped. An occasional factor behind the decision to shelve the song was a technical defect, specifically a hum, which for me is very interesting, because there's been a version online which has been homemade. One of the demos appeared, but I don't think it's the same version that's going to be on the new version, because there's no hum on it. So I suspect there is another home demo he did to the one that's out there. Because basically somebody got hold of this demo and recorded, overdubbed everything. And they also used parts of Because for the backing.
Oh, what? Someone just did that on... a fan did that on YouTube. Oh, interesting.
It's been out for years.
So the Because... Penn Jillette was talking about the Because backing's in that clip as well, wasn't he? But someone's already done that before. So maybe he got confused between the two.
Yeah, he's such an unreliable witness.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, you're right, he's a literal magician, so we should probably just discount that. I mean, it's so exciting. Yeah. Are you excited? Like, how do you feel about it coming out?
I'm kind of excited. I do know the song. So I'm kind of excited to see how they will do it, because the difference between this and Free as a Bird and Real Love is that it's properly unfinished. the verses and the chorus, there's bits that are missing, or they change each time. So Paul will have had to, and assumably George back in the day, depends when they did it, when they rearranged it, will have to have written part of it. So it will probably be a Lennon-McCartney, maybe even Harrison composition.
I mean, that's just, I just find that very emotional.
But it is, it's very slow, it's all in A minor, it's quite a sad song. It's one of these John's apologetic songs. Constantly apologising. It's like, come on, John, don't worry about it. So the song itself, and I think Penn, again, Unreliable Witness, was saying that he and Giles were saying about the quality of the song itself, and somebody jumped in and said, it's the Beatles. So I'm looking forward to it as a John, Paul, George and Ringo recording, as opposed to a Beatles recording, I think.
That makes sense. Did you feel the same about Free as a Bird and Real Love?
Yeah, I guess. I think Free as a Bird, that was played at my mum's funeral.
Oh, Chris, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Because that was the last thing I remember her watching. Sorry.
Oh, right. Chris, that's a really beautiful thing to have played there. But yeah, of course, take a minute.
Yeah, I do like that song. Moving on.
It's a very emotional, I mean, I don't even have a unbelievably meaningful memory like that to go with Free as a Bird, but I choke up every time I listen to Free as a Bird, because, I mean, the thing with the Beatles, I think Ian Leslie said this when he was on I Am the Egg Pod before, as you can tell, I'm a big fan, don't miss an episode. He said that the time when you're really kind of hooked in for life on the Beatles is when you think about the story behind it. And that was definitely the case for me as a kid watching it, because, you know, watching the documentary, and it was actually my mum that had to say to me, she had to kind of break the news to me that John Lennon was dead, because I didn't know, you know, as a kind of 11-year-old watching it. And oh, so no. Then hearing Free as a Bird and his voice, it's so beautiful, but it's so sad, because you kind of know they would have done something together again, the four of them, eventually, had he been alive. I'm sure they would have done. And how emotional it must have been for them doing it. I mean, Paul does say that listening in to his voice in the headphones was really emotional, and they had to pretend that he'd just gone out for lunch so that they could kind of cope with recording it. And then additionally, the words and everything, it's so emotional. So yeah, it's a very beautiful and sad song anyway, I think.
Yeah, because you were saying to me during the week about Now and Then, the lyrics for that as well.
Yeah, the lyrics are, well, I listened to the demo again just before, I listened to Free as a Bird and the demo of Now and Then again just before, you know, knowing we were doing this. And it's so, you know, that's a kind of a cliched word, but it's haunting, his voice. The actual way his voice comes across. Somebody said this already, I can't remember who, so apologies, but it was like his voice is coming from the afterlife in some way, you know. Yeah. And it does have that quality to it. And then the idea of Paul then, because Chris, you'll know better, and if you're happy to talk about Free as a Bird, fine. If not, but Paul did write some extra lyrics for that, didn't he, for Free as a Bird?
Yeah, only a few. Right. It was because John's demo, he's sort of, whatever happened to...
Right.
And it was literally a couple of lines.
And then he adds... So he... Lennon says, whatever happened to the life once we knew... Does he say the life once that we once knew? And then Paul adds, how will...
Yeah.
So Paul just adds, how will we ever live without each other? I mean, that's... I could well up just...
I reckon ChatGTP could do that.
See, I'm so soppy about John and Paul. I really am. Like, I just, honestly, I get, you know, I just think there's like this great love story, and it's so heartbreaking, you know, that they were kind of torn apart, and then Paul's kind of spent...
Oh, it's Romeo and Juliet,
isn't it? And he spent, you know, 40 years just saying, I loved him, and John, and he loved me, you know. It's, John talks so much about how much he loves Paul so much when he was alive, thankfully, which you know, I hope Paul knows. So yeah, I get very soppy about their relationship.
Well, we've got more AI again, Unreliable Witness, Pen, the conjuring madam. He's basically said as well, when he was seeing Giles, he claims that the next Beatles project is going to be the re-release, which this kind of makes sense. It's the 50th anniversary of the Red and the Blue compilations, but using the AI technology to demix all of the songs.
Right.
Which, again, has caused a bit of a stir online. I think most of the stir is for the second, the Blue album, because we've all just forked out a load of money on the box sets, and now there's going to be another remix using AI, or is it going to be the same ones? I don't know. But what are your thoughts on that, if it does happen?
So because I'm this child of anthology for, you know, second wave Beatlemania, or is it third wave? But I don't know. The Red and the Blue album actually aren't something I ever listened to. The compilation I listened to was One.
Oh, yeah.
That was the album that I used to work in a jean shop in Bournemouth. We sold jeans to the delightful public. And the guys in there were kind of... Because I got into the Beatles and I kind of got more... I was more into kind of R&B and hip-hop, you know, kind of teenagers do. And these guys who I thought were these, like, super old adults that I worked with, and in hindsight were probably kind of 23... When I was 16 or 17, I was working there, and they were a bit more indie, so we'd listen to kind of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Oasis, and then this Beatles album, this Number One, just had it on repeat and loved it. So I don't have any great affection for the Red and the Blue album. I don't ever listen to them. I would always rather listen to the albums. I mean, I don't really listen to compilation albums much. I do love a greatest hit. But yeah, so I'm maybe not the person to ask. I think that I'll be interested to listen to it, but it's just not the way that I listen to the Beatles music. I don't really, they were so popular, weren't they, the Red and the Brown, but I don't really like them personally. Is that okay to say? I'm just suddenly having this moment. Maybe I've said this.
I'm so disgusted. I'm gonna have to blow my nose. Sorry. In disdain.
Chris just hangs up the phone immediately and I'm forbidden from Eggpod forever.
I think when you say, because I think I reckon I'm the second generation, you must be the third or the fourth, because I was the generation after they split.
Right.
And the first thing so many people my age heard was the Red and the Blue albums. And it was just this massive onslaught of one song after the other just exploding, you know, and you discovered the Beatles chronologically as well. For me, it was just a massive thing. But I think using the demix technology, if this is going to happen, we don't know if it's going to happen, but I think the Red album will be of particular interest, because we've only heard the remixes of the later years, and the early ones, especially, you know, Love Me Do, which is only available in mono. Is it going to lose some of the excitement? And you know, if you just isolate each track, right, however much reverb you put on it or whatever, is it going to lose something or is it going to gain? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it? So the Red, that's the first one, is it? The 62?
Yes, sorry, that's the early. 66.
Yeah, I mean, I think this gets to the heart of why we love the Beatles so much, and why the Beatles using AI above any other artist using AI is such a big deal. Because I think... You put a clip up of another Eggpod where you'd had a guest on that was talking about it's not Beatles versus Stones anymore, it's Beatles versus Shakespeare. Yeah, they're in a league of their own, and they mean so much, and they actually are very historically important. I mean, I sort of, you know, history is kind of my first love, and I love their music and I love them as kind of charismatic individuals, but I also think they're fascinating as a historical cultural phenomenon. Samira Ahmed is amazing when she talks about this. And so it's like messing with, I personally am not interested in Macbeth reinterpreted by ChatGPT, right? That's not interesting to me. And I think this is what we're going to see with AI generated content more generally. I mean, it will be interesting to see, and I could be wrong, but my prediction is human beings are always going to love what other human beings do. They're, what's amazing is when you see someone who's you, the same species as you, and yet they've done these things that are so far beyond what you could ever do, whether that's just, you know, when you watch the gymnastics at the Olympics, and you're like, hang on, what? Your body isn't the same as my body. I can't do that. And the Beatles are just an astonishing genius talent, but they are also very, very human. And their humanity is part of what we love about them. That's why the story of John and Paul adds so much. And why the story of them in Hamburg and being young friends that suddenly take over the world. And really, all these songs just came from these two guys with two guitars just, you know, in a hotel room in Newcastle. Like, what are you talking about? This is crazy. And so I think people just, you know, I don't know, but I think, you know, I'm also a big Beyonce fan, and I feel very differently about Beyonce using AI than the Beatles using it for that reason. I guess the only thing to say there is that, of course, you know, Paul is thankfully, and hopefully for a much longer time, still with us to make decisions about his own voice. And so this point about whether has he used AI to de-age his voice on Now and Then doesn't seem likely based on what they've said. But if he does choose to do that, then, you know, is that okay? It's just, it's his voice. Can he do what he wants with his voice? Or can he do what he wants with his voice when it comes to Paul McCartney songs, but not when it comes to Beatles songs? But then why not, given that the Beatles always were at the forefront of using and abusing technology, right? So it's a really interesting...
Tomorrow never knows.
Exactly. Tomorrow never knows, putting their, you know, voices backwards and seagulls and all sorts of crazy, amazing stuff. And on your live show, which sadly I couldn't make, but I loved listening to you, so thank you so much for putting it up as a podcast. It was so enjoyable.
Thank you.
And I think it was David Quantick saying, Free as a Bird isn't actually the Beatles, because, you know, it's like kind of like you said, you know, it's three of this, the three Tools plus Jeff Lynne. And of course, technically that's right. But certainly me coming to the Beatles at that time fresh was very happy to accept it as the Beatles, because it was kind of, yeah. they had given their consent to it in some way. And John, I guess, hadn't, but through Yoko at the time, and Sean now does. And so there's an issue about consent there. And so if Paul's saying, yeah, I'm happy to have my voice de-aged to make it fit better, then kind of who are we to tell him he can't do that? You know, it's very difficult. it's not easy. And I think it's particularly because it's the Beatles, it's not easy. They just mean a lot more to people.
Yeah. One element I do find quite charming as well is that, as you're saying, Paul and John loved each other. And the fact that, I'm just thinking, I don't know, trying to think of an example, but say the Rooftop gig in Let It Be or in Get Back, where you've got John and Paul and Ringo sort of saying, yeah, okay, let's do this. So John and Paul are for it, and George is, I don't want to go on the roof, but they do it anyway.
Yeah.
And I get the same feeling with this now and then.
That's so true.
George, you know, Paul, it was always going to happen. I think.
Yeah, didn't Ringo say recently, like, I don't know why we did this, but Paul must have, you know, been bored and he picked up the phone, yeah. Which is so charming, because it's what Ringo said used to happen all the time, right? He's like, me and John would be chilling in the garden, and then Paul would ring and say, come on, let's go make another album, and they say, oh, all right, Paul. And it's just so lovely, and the fact we've got to see that dynamic in Get Back, albeit, you know, obviously towards the end, is so lovely. You're right, it's such a good point, you know, it's... Oh, it's probably why Paul gets so annoyed when people tell him different things. And he's like, hang on, I was actually in the Beatles, you know. this is what it was like. It's fine. Like, trust me. He was on, there was a Mark Ronson documentary, and Paul was on there saying, yeah, John would have loved autotune.
Yeah. Ringo's quote, he was asked, why revive it now? He says, I don't know. Paul must...
I think it's a great impression.
It's because I've got a cold. I can go a bit
deeper. Do it.
Paul must have had a slow day. He says, you know that track we did? Do you want to work on that? I drummed on it and I sang on it. It is moving because the four of us are there again, and there won't be ever again. So, you know, that's the thing. We're always looking for some context. Is it going to be part of this red and blue thing? Is it going to be part of something from anthology? But it was just Paul... Yeah, you know that song we had? Should we just finish it off?
Yeah.
It might just be that.
Well, okay, so can we talk about this? Because I'm fascinated what you think about this theory that the phrase Now and Then, you know, means something to Paul. So what we know, and again, please, you'll know better than I do, but I think what we know is that he said he wanted to finish it and, you know, George didn't, whether that be because he thought the song was not very good, or the technical difficulties, or they just had enough of each other by then. They, you know, they don't finish it. I mean, Paul did say, you know, I'm going to finish it one day. And of course, there's two big important kind of cultural institutions here. One is the Beatles, but the other is John and Paul. The other is Lennon McCartney. And that is, of course, I just think a demo from John is going to just mean a very different thing to Paul than it would have done to George and Ringo. And so I think Paul probably feels like, I'm going to finish this eventually because he's, you know, he's my best friend. He's one of the loves of my life. And I'm, you know, want to make sure that I finish it. But then there's this other view, isn't there, that the song's also about him, potentially.
Yes.
And that for that reason, he wants to finish it. And I was listening to the words again to think, you know, could this be about him? And it seems highly likely that it was, in the sense that, you know, why would he be singing Now and Then I Miss You about his wife, who he's with all the time? It doesn't make any sense. So there's some bits in there that you could see about Yoko, but then John has written songs before that seem to be about both Yoko and Paul, like Bless You is the song, Gesundheit to you, Chris, as you sneeze. The song Bless You is obviously about them both, right? The first verse seems pretty clearly about Yoko, and the second verse and maybe the third seem so obviously about Paul. I mean, people say it's over now that we've spread our wings, but you and I know better, darling. And, you know, it just seems very obviously. So it could easily be about both of them. And in that case, it's going to mean a huge amount more to Paul. And he's going to want to finish it for that reason too.
And the phrase Now and Then.
Of course, right. So what do you think about that? So the story is the Carl Perkins story, right? So Carl Perkins goes to some beautiful island to record with Paul, and Ringo, I think, is there. And he writes the song My Old Friend. And Carl tells a story later, and you can watch him tell it on YouTube. It's really incredible. He says he's being very emotional when he was leaving, and he knew he wouldn't be able to articulate it the next day. It was his last night, and he's on the beach, and he says, I wouldn't be able to say how much this had meant to me to Paul face to face, so I did what I always do. I wrote a song about it. He goes and plays the song. The song is My Old Friend. And it ends, or it's throughout, and it ends, My old friend, won't you think of me every now and then? And apparently he's playing this song, and Paul starts crying. And Carl Perkins is, you know, oh my gosh, you okay? And Paul leaves. And Linda says, no, don't worry, Carl. It's great that he's crying. He hasn't really processed his emotions about Lennon passing, because this is only a few months later that this is happening. It was 1981, I think. And she says, but how did you know? And Carl says, how did I know what? And she said, but think of me every now and again. That's the last words that John said to Paul when we last saw them. He said, think of me every now and then, old friend. And so apparently Paul and Carl and Linda, this is as Carl tells it, all believe that kind of Lennon like sends this communication to Paul, like via Carl. But in the video where you watch it, Carl's telling this story and he's saying this kind of thing about, you know, I think that I was, you know, transmuting this message via Lennon to Paul. via AI. And as he's saying this kind of, you know, it's whether you believe in that stuff or not, exactly, it sounds a bit out there, let's put it that way. And as he does it, his secretary rings and he said, oh, you know, sorry, you know, I'm just doing this thing. What's going on? And she says, oh, it's just, I've got Paul McCartney's just called for you. And he's like, what? Paul McCartney? You've got to be kidding. Like, what? Tell me that boy isn't from the spirit world or something like this. It's so good. Yes. It's so good. Love Carl Perkins. Yeah.
What you were saying before, why Paul's? He said it since, you know, Anthology. He wants his song out. Mm. It clearly means a lot to him. You're absolutely right, I think.
Yeah. And when it comes to that, then because I'm so soppy about John and Paul, I just think, sure, yeah, whatever you want. It's your best friend. It's the last ever Beatles song. Like, do what you want. De-age your voice. I don't care. Like, I just feel sort of so, I can't imagine what it must be like. It's such an odd, difficult position for Paul. I hope that this gives him a lot of comfort.
Yeah. I hope we get to hear it, because my memory of Free as the Bird, the day that came out, I think it was on Breakfast Television I saw it, the video. But when it came out, everybody I knew who was a Beatles fan, we all sat there watching the video. And the feeling of a new Beatles song, you know, we'd loved the Beatles, you know, since we were toddlers. And it was a new Beatles song. That was the big thing. Like I was saying, it was like John, Paul, George and Ringo. But for that moment and the video that went with it was just astonishing.
How good is that video? Because it is a beautiful video, isn't it? It's like a bird. It's a bird's eye view, isn't it? And that's follows it, them through their lives together, the four of them. It's really well done.
My favourite thing is Tracy Barlow from Coronation Street makes a cameo in it. And I think she's meant to be Polythene Pan.
What?
Because they've got all the different characters.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Oh, that's so great. Oh, I have to go back and watch it because I haven't looked for the little Easter eggs from the different songs. Like I hadn't really grasped that. Yeah. I just remember it being kind of seeing them.
There's about 80 on there. Whoa. I don't know if you can see, recognise that.
She's supposed to be Polythene Pam.
I think so. I can't remember. It's been so
stunning.
Long.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't have in my mind that Polythene Pam was a real beauty. That's not how that song came across to me. I mean, if it was, then I think they've done a really bad job at getting that impression across. Oh gosh, there'll be a video, won't there? Because they did videos with the Revolver release. That I love. Did you see the I'm Only Sleeping video? The kind of
yes.
Wasn't that beautiful as well?
Yeah, that was lovely. Yeah, the video will be interesting. Will they use AI? Because there's a lot of, and this is just rumours and gossip, people saying that Peter Jackson may be doing a video for it. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, they've got one for Real Love as well, which is also really lovely. So
yeah.
It'd be weird not to do one, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Please don't let there be any generative AI in the video. That would be terrible. That would be so bad. Because that's another thing, obviously. So a big controversy in AI world, in my world, is this deepfakes. So this is a very well-known example and a very terrifying example being early on in the war in Ukraine. Somebody got a video of Zelensky, President Zelensky, and made it appear as if his mouth was, you know, you can make it very accurate to make the mouth move to look like it's saying different words, and then they're using the voice cloning and got him to say that he was surrendering and everybody in Ukraine should kind of put down their arms, which is, you know, can imagine if people have believed it. It's absolutely terrifying. So you can do this, and I think you can do it if you're, say you have an English language TV program and you need to put subtitles and overdub it for your Spanish audience. Before, you just have the kind of new Spanish language over the top, but you can tell it's very kind of clumsy, isn't it? Because you can tell that their mouth is moving and not saying the words that are being said. But now they can make it so it even looks like, so they can take the actor. And this, by the way, is partly what the Hollywood strike is about. Yeah, so this is partly what the actors' strike is about. Them saying, you cannot just use our image in perpetuity and just use AI to have us say something different or do something different, which is fascinating and something that people like Paul are going to have to think very carefully about what they're happy to have done with AI, with their image, after they pass. And Dolly Parton was in the news recently saying that she was saying, you know, I've been asked to, I was going to try and do the accent then, but that would have been no way. They salt everybody. But she was like, no, I don't want to leave anything of me down here on earth. You know, you've got enough of me. And, you know, it was very spiritual to her. But she was saying, you know, I'm having to think about this now. And of course, you know, you are going to have to think about that. And for John, you know, for the Lennon estate, you know, that's going to be up to Sean to decide what they do. And I imagine they'll be very protective. But other estate managers of deceased stars have been somewhat less thoughtful, shall we say, because you have things like, I mean, does everyone remember the Whitney Houston? Do you remember the Whitney Houston hologram? I think it was this.
Oh boy.
Yeah, yes. Right? They kind of sent a hologram of Whitney Houston on tour, which I love Whitney Houston. There's no way I'm going to go and see a hologram. But everybody loves the ABBA hologram, Voyager, or whatever it's called. I haven't seen it, but everyone's saying it's amazing. But I, you know, okay, so partly that's going to be technology because the ABBA members are all still alive and they filmed it and then they just have kind of de-aged them, I think. I think that's what they did. But there's a consent issue here. It goes back to what we were talking about before with Paul, you know, ABBA can say, no, we film this, you know, we don't want to be out there every night, but we film this and it is us and they've just recorded it. And, you know, now it's out there and people love it. And I'm part of the reason they love it, I'm sure, is because they know that their kind of band that they love have given their permission. But as a Whitney Houston fan, I think they did it with Tupac as well. Like, I don't want to go and see a hologram that she never even knew was possible technologically, so could never have given her consent to. And if you think about people that died even 10 years ago, but certainly 20, 30, 40, then you can't even comprehend of something like generative AI at the time. So I think that's a really difficult part of it as well, that in the AI industry and then in the music industry and in the TV and film industry, like, how do people have control over their own image, essentially? And, you know, the Beatles will have a lot of people thinking about that, I hope. If they don't, if you're listening, Apple, MPL, I'm available. Well, I have a, you know, I'm...
Well, I do know Sean Lennon listens occasionally. So hello, Sean, if you were there.
Hi, Sean.
Get in touch with Verity.
Sean, please do get in touch. I am delighted. Yeah, because Sean's in... Yeah, Sean, you know, he's savvy. He's into tech stuff. He knows it, doesn't he? So he'll... Thank goodness they've got someone like that thinking it through. But yeah, Sean, if you need an AI expert who also loves your dad, I'm the one.
And when you finish, can you come on Egg Pod?
Yeah,
as well,
then please come on Egg Pod, because I would also like to listen to that. In fact, that's more important. Do that.
Well, Verity, thanks so much. That's really, well, it's helped me clear a few things up. And I guess, finally, the Beatles, what do they mean to you?
I think the Beatles, to me, mean, like, pure joy. They are the purest form of joy. And it's a really difficult time for a lot of people at the moment, in all sorts of different ways. If you follow the news, a lot of stuff is terrifying. We've got war in Europe and climate crisis. You know, politics doesn't feel particularly stable or safe at the moment, and hasn't for a while. For anybody on any side, you know, it's can feel very unnerving. And I think part of what I really believe and have written about in this book that I have about AI is that the science and the technology of the world really reflects the kind of cultural and political moment. And that's why we're all feeling so uneasy about AI, because we're all feeling so uneasy about a bunch of different things. And the Beatles is this, it's not an escape, because they're not separate from that world, but they do represent this moment in time when the world seemed to be on this kind of upward trajectory, and that reflects in the music. They're so full of hope and positivity, and even when they're not, actually, even when they're writing something very sad, it's still beautiful and progressive. And they are the place that right now, if you're feeling stressed or whatever, and this is why this, you know, your podcast is so great, is you can just go and think about this kind of moment of excellence and joy, and I guess remind yourself that everything is going to be okay in the end. What's the great line? Love you make is equal to the love you take, you know. Yeah, they mean a huge amount to me. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to come and talk about them to you.
Verity Harding, thank you so much.
Thank you.